This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 261 of the Countdown Podcast. We hope you are enjoying your little time alone or with yourself for now. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies, sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And, well, as Wayne has alluded, today is all about giving you something to do. There's lots and lots of podcasts out there at the moment about, you know, what are you going to binge? What are you going to watch right now on Netflix? What's available on Disney Plus? You know, what's Amazon Prime serving up for you to see? And we thought, well, what if we guided you through some of the great films from the end of last millennium that no one really talks about, that no one really gives a lot of play to? Or if you prefer, what are we calling this one, Wayne?
Hidden Gems of the 90s.
That is it. The top 10 hidden gems of the 90s is the topic for today. And Wayne, was this a tough one for you to do?
I thought it would be initially. It turns out I have 2 million like honorable mentions. So like, obviously I won't need them all. But like, no, I had lots and lots of them. And the only thing that allowed me or sort of, you know, let me cut down the list was I'll look at a movie and go, all right, well, this has always been famous to me, right? But how did it do box office wise? How did, even if it did well box office wise for me, I'm like, is it still talked about? Have people forgotten about it? So that's what keeps it up and down on the list. There's certain amazing movies in the 90s that you always loved, but you look at it and you go, you know what? Everyone kind of knew about this one, so I'm not going to put that in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you're right that these are films that we obviously love, but we don't think enough people appreciate. So especially a couple of them on my list, you probably heard me talk about in the podcast before at different times and different lists. You may therefore be more familiar with them than the average Joe, and that's the way that I've approached this list. And I added a caveat of pretty much they either made no money, lost money, none of them were a success. All these films, they didn't even make their marketing budget back in effect. So I know you didn't. No, I don't think you went that way exactly, but that's the way I helped
me. Some of my movies made money and actually were kind of well made. They just have been forgotten. So yeah, anyway.
All right.
We'll see.
That's going to be the topic of today, and we hope in these difficult times that you are safe, you're looking after yourself, you're keeping, sadly, distant from everyone, which is a requirement at the moment, and that we can guide you through a little bit of that time and occupy an hour and change of it in a distracting way. Yeah. All right. Well, we kick off every episode with a segment that we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
What did we get across the wire this week, Polly?
Well, we got a couple of things. The first one I want to mention is a follow-up to a guest show spot, I should say, that I did on a show a couple of weeks back on the I Like to Like Things podcast with Chris Brayton as the host. I went on to talk about AFL and the Essendon Bombers. And then they had their response edition with Chris and his wife, Elise. And they got to talk about watching football for the first time and what that did for them. And I want to say thanks to them very much. They were very kind. It's a very positive show. In fact, it's a great show in this day and age. You know, so when you need a little bit of positivity in your life, head on over, check out I Like to Like Things.
That's interesting.
Not just my episode about AFL. There's stuff from everything. There's stuff from, you know, favorite old cartoon series and albums. Like someone did an album of Tool's recent release, which is pretty damn cool as well. And then stuff that obviously I have little to no interest in, but which, you know, because of the enthusiasm with which Chris and his guest approaches it, he kind of gets you on board with it. So check that out and to Chris if he's listening. The Brownlow Medal, the players don't know the votes as they go through the season. Just a heads up for you there. Okay. Then second part, we've had a lot of heartfelt emails of late from different listeners, and this week is no exception as we celebrated last week our fifth anniversary, our fifth birthday, if you will, 5 years of the podcast of The Countdown going with you. And as we continue this, to use your term, Wayne, lockdown with The Countdown, hashtag. Boom. Here is a response from a very regular contributor to the show, Etienne Fillion-Savé. Did I get there?
Ah, Etienne, yep.
Yeah, Etienne, thank you so much. Here's what he wrote. Dear Paul and Wayne, congratulations on your 5 years of podcasting. Almost 2 years ago, I discovered your podcast because of autoplay on Spotify. I'm pretty sure your top 10 black and white movies episode started playing after an episode of So I Married a Movie Geek. Shout out to Justin and Chrissy. And I haven't stopped listening since. I was living on my own back then, and so you guys had and your movie banter were welcome company. I will always remember that one night I fell asleep in a hammock on a camping trip while listening to your guys' top 10 sequels episode. Your friendly and casual conversations with the occasional expletive-filled rants directed at one another are such a delight. It reminds me of the kind of talks I have with my friends in film studies all the time, and there's something so beautiful and heartwarming about listening to two guys on the other side of the world doing the same. On top of that, the community you two have fostered is beautifully diverse and welcoming. And that's really great. That's it's lovely to hear that, Aisyon. Bit more though. The last couple of months have been hard for me personally, but also a valuable learning experience. But having you guys there to listen has been a much needed spot of light in all that darkness. It's very strange to say this in the midst of a pandemic, but I'm starting to feel like things are looking up for me. These past weeks of change have made me feel so fortunate and grateful for everything I have in my life, family, friends, and interests. So I feel like even little things such as listening to your podcast every week make a world of difference in the long run, not just for me, but for everyone who is part of this community. And from hearing other people's stories in your podcast, that does seem to be the case. Right now, it feels like having places like the Countdown Podcast for different people to come together and share their love and passion is such an important and good thing. So thank you again for doing this week after week, rain or shine, social distancing or not. Aisyon.
Wow, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. This is a shitty time for almost, like, pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
But you're in your own movie, man. Like, things may go well for you just in your space and stuff. Like, it's nuts. But I think that's what's good about it is that we're all going through it. So everything kind of, like, it's just like, you know what it's about. So, I don't know. Everyone can at least get on that.
Yeah, and to have, as Aisyon is suggesting, to have this podcast, it's a useful focus for me, and I'm sure it is for you as well, Wayne. And it's great to have a community that we've built over this time. And I was really touching to hear Aisyon say it's welcoming. And that's something that I think we have really worked to foster. And I'm glad the listeners are such active community members are also of a like mind. So on that note, then here's your announcement. We are kicking off the watch parties this week. So we're going to do a couple a week is the basic plan at this point in time, you know, schedules and whatever allowing. And we're going to do one in an evening Australian Western Standard Time, probably 9:30, 10 o'clock, we'll finalise the time and we'll put it up in the Facebook listening community as well as a link on Twitter as well or a notification on Twitter. So if you're following this, you'll get a chance. It'll be 24 hours after this episode drops, give or take, about 29 hours if I'm going to be really technical. And then we're going to do another one on Saturday morning Australian Time, or West Australian Time, which will allow everybody to listen. So the Eastern State is in the early afternoon and Friday night for you at home in the Northern Hemisphere. And that one's going to be family friendly. So we're going to time it so that hopefully people can check out a film, which if the kids are running around, it's not too bad. And I think we've agreed, Wayne, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is going to be that one for the family friendly one.
I just realized I can't cuss on that episode.
Well, yeah, we haven't even decided if we're going to record that yet or we're just going to be sitting in a chat and all typing whatever, which means you can probably cuss as much as you want if you're typing. But if we're recording
we're learning as we go, guys.
And we're streaming it live, which we'll determine in due course. And maybe the first week we'll just have a couple of practice runs and then maybe we'll build up to it. But
okay.
You would have to curb on the family-friendly ones.
Oh my God. All right. Well, let's see if these keep going.
All right. Thank you again, Aisyon, for that. It was really, really special. We really appreciate it. And it's great to be here after 5 years recording for all of you and having a good time doing it.
Thanks, man.
All right, then, that's the recount. A bit longer than usual. That's what we'd like to do when there's something personal to touch on. Let's get into it then on the other side of this promo for the Epic Film Guys live stream for a cure. We're going to be talking the top 10 hidden gems of the 90s.
Can you imagine a world immune to all forms of cancer?
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come for our fourth annual live stream for the cure.
And this year, we need your help more than ever.
Please join us May 27th through May 31st for 48 hours of live content from guests and podcasts around the world.
We'll be aiming for our most ambitious goal to date as we try to raise $10,000 for the Cancer Research Institute.
Please visit www.livestreamforthecure.com for more information on this year's event and how you can be a part of it. Together, we can make a difference.
The top 10 hidden gems of the 90s is the subject of this week's countdown.
I don't know why I found it funny.
That's the point. We're trying to make it funny. We've talked about it already, our parameters and the likes. Pretty straightforward. So I think we can just leap straight into it, Wayne, without any further ado. Why don't I lead away this week?
Go for it, son.
My number 10 is a film which I know that you saw, and I think you're on the same wavelength as me in saying it was, you know, better than expected, bit of a sort of Pulp Fiction follow-up. About a year or so later, it came out. So you know they were scrambling to make this one as Pulp Fiction was hitting it big. I'm talking about 1995's Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Oh, what? Lou! Yeah, totally, man. Totally.
Okay, it's directed by someone named Gary Fleder, and it's basically about Andy Garcia. He's the star of it. And it's one of these films where everybody has a weird nickname. So, like, He's the saint, and he's a bit of a gangster, and he gets tasked by his crime boss, Christopher Walken, playing the man with the plan.
That's his name, the man with the plan.
To effectively bring his son's ex-girlfriend back to him. And the way they have to do this is by basically breaking up the girlfriend and the current boyfriend.
Yep.
And so the saint gets a bunch of his old mates together, including like Christopher Lloyd and Bill Nunn and William Forsythe and Treat Williams, and things go pear-shaped.
Yeah, then it's like Easy Wind and Pieces and Big Bear franchise. And shit, that's what their fucking name is.
That's how they refer themselves the whole time, in this really stylized kind of way.
Yes, right? It's really weird. And Treat Williams is Critical Bill, who's this insane person. Right? And so it's...
You can probably see where this is going, this particular film, because no one saw it. It made only $500,000 off an $8 million budget.
Tanked! And it's such a... You know what? The Andy Garcia carries it, in my opinion, right? The Jimmy the Saint, whatever his name is, it sort of arises above B-movie status just because of that. He's really watchable. But also, it's one of those weird movies where... It's definitely a gangster flick, and you can see that the lead guy has sort of got a heart. And then at the end, the tone of this movie is oddly pensive, given what the ending is. And if you've seen it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good pick. Mine was way higher on mine.
Oh, well, okay, so I've undersold it according to you. But for me, it's those little bits and pieces that stand out. And I thought it was quite, from memory, I had a lot of these sort of neo-noir kind of elements to it. And
plenty.
Very strange, canted cameras and all that kind of stuff, which helped sell it for me as well.
Well, there's a thing in it called buckwheat, and that is a type of execution where you get shot up the ass, and it's real fucking nasty. Yeah, so it's odd, it's good, but it's pensive, but it's quite harsh. But it's, I don't know.
It's really dark. It's a really dark film. I think I agree.
It's dark, but it's interesting. Well done.
If you needed one more thing to sell it, it also stars Steve Buscemi as the hitman.
The hitman who comes in,
whose name is Mr. Shh.
Yeah.
Who everyone's
so
terrified
quirky
of.
But harsh. Yeah.
Now that I think about it, there's probably a bit of DNA in Reap that comes from this film.
Probably.
Yeah.
God knows we still... Yeah.
Reap if you don't know what Reap is, consider yourself very fortunate.
Yeah.
All right, that's my number 10.
Excellent. My number 10 is a movie that I seem to remember you and I seeing together. Back in the day, it was a movie called Freeway.
Oh,
and
yeah, really? That's a surprise.
Okay. Yes, it is a surprise. Now, no one knew about this one because it cost $3 million. It's got Reese Witherspoon and Kiefer Sutherland in it, and it made $295,000.
Jesus, so, we contributed a significant proportion to that.
Seriously, that's like five. Yeah, definitely. Because I remember going
so
out
that's like 5%. No, it's not about 5%.
No, this is... Well, okay, so this is... I remember us going out, and you brought your girl at the time. It was a bunch of us, and basically, this movie is about... It's an exploitation-style retelling of Little Red Riding Hood, okay? So it's really kind of cool because it's got Reese Witherspoon, and she's this headstrong, sort of foul-mouthed, illiterate high schooler who goes on the run when her cracked-out mom and stepfather are arrested for solicitation or some shit like that. But she, in fleeing her home, meets up with Kiefer Sutherland, and his character's name is Bob Wolverton. So he's the fucking wolf, you know what I'm saying? And he he talks to her in the car, and he gives her a lift, and then it turns out he's a fucking serial killer and necrophile. And I know, but here's the thing though, right? The actual way the movie goes, there is even a version of the wolf impersonating grandma in a way, but in a realistic way. It's really, really interesting, this movie. Freeway, it's called. So Reese Witherspoon is great in it. It's really, really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. It's just, look it up.
Nice. No, I have not thought about that film in 25 years.
I know, right? It's one of those. So you can check it out.
Here's a film I have thought about a lot over the years, though, at my number 9, and one which I liked, but I was let down at the time because I thought it was going to be absolutely fucking amazing. I'm talking about Alex Proyas's Dark City.
Okay, Dark City. I remember watching this. I remember the ending. I remember how I felt. Please keep going.
Yeah, so you didn't have... This isn't on yours?
It's not, but it was around the honorable mentions. So you really dug this one.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure I did really dig it, and that's why it's 9 on my list, whereas I really did dig. Things are doing Denver when you're dead. But this one is so memorable, and I don't want to spoil it, even though it is 22 years old.
Did you feel it was Matrix-esque, except more dank?
Yeah, it's really, again, a very, very dark film, and one that's very difficult to predict where it's going. And it's, so it stars Rufus Sewell, William Hurt, Kiefer Sutherland again, Jennifer Connelly. Starts out like this noir detective film and just goes places that you're not going to expect in the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, and I think I remember, first of all, because Melissa George was in this. She was from Perth. Like, she's an actress from Perth.
Yeah, she is. Looking at the cast list, yep.
Yeah, and I remember at the time, that was sort of an interesting point about it. But by the time you had gone through the end of it, you definitely felt like it was dark. But the ending paid off for me, is all I could say. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, all right. And again, probably without speaking too much more about it, I just want to draw people's attention to it. It's weird. It's different. It's ultimately a sci-fi film. I think I can just say that part. Whether you dig that or not might be up for debate, but it's definitely worth checking out to decide whether you want to see it or not. And given that it made $27 million off a $27 million budget, not many people saw it at the time. I think it's got a little bit more of cult status over the years, and again, while it's lower on my list. But yeah, I kind of, this came to mind immediately with the topic, and I thought I need to mention it at some point.
I would say it's worth a look.
Yeah, well, obviously that's what we're saying, the hidden gems.
No, but even like, I'm just saying, yeah, it's even though you may not be a gem, it's still worth looking at. You'll probably be interested enough in it. That's what I think.
Okay, anyway. All right.
Okay, my number 9 is a movie which did do sort of quite well, but no one really talks about it because it was a Robert Altman film called The Player.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you remember this one?
I remember the long opening tracking shot.
Yes, because the long opening tracking shot is cool. Now, this movie is 124 minutes long, so it's not really short, because Robert Altman doesn't do short shit, but just shit sometimes. Yeah, look, I gotta say, I'm not a Robert Altman fan. I don't like shortcuts that much, you know, whatever, right? But this one, The Player, is actually where...
Did you do that one as well?
Didn't mind that one as much, but still it was shit. Yeah. The Player has got Tim Robbins in it. He's playing this like Hollywood studio exec guy. And he basically, he's a script screener, so he gets to turn down scripts that come in and out and whatever. He turns down a script. Whoever wrote that script is like now pissed and starts sending him death threats. And it's that kind of a movie, right? But like, what the real thing I'm taking from this is that movies like Baby Driver, where, you know, if characters are talking about something and then all of a sudden in the background in the scenery something references what they're talking about, that started here for me. This is the first time I've ever seen a movie do that. So it's actually quite an amazing watch. So, you know, The Player is kind of cool.
Okay.
One guy talking.
I don't remember much about it at all. I did watch it at the time, which, you know, I guess because I was a film fan, but I'm not a huge Robert Altman person, so...
Me neither. He always puts a titty bonus in every one of his movies. I can tell you that. That's all.
Wait, does he? So what you're saying, Wayne, because he sounds exactly like you.
You know me. I see a pair of thick, weighty breasts, and all logic flies out the window.
What is that from? What is that?
It's a new addition to the soundboard. Welcome Captain Holt to the soundboard.
Oh, that from Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Yep. You and your fucking Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh my God, 30 Rock is so much better than Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah, no. It's like 80, 90 times better. Roughly 80,
fuck
100
off.
Times better.
Every anyway. Time you mention those words, titty bonus, that sound drop is coming out. I didn't even have to lead you in. I knew we'd get there. Before the end of
this
episode.
It's too loud. It's too long. Like all your sound drops, bitch. All right, fine. All right, well, my number 9 was The Player. What's Paul's number freaking?
My number 8 is one that might be on your list. It's a film which I think balances sort of the darkness again with comedy really well. And it stars John Cusack at his most awesomeness. There's a period of time which John Cusack was king. And it was the late 90s, early 2000s. And after that, it's all got a bit sad and a bit sort of shitty. But... Since, you know, post High Fidelity, basically.
Yeah.
But this was right in his wheelhouse. I'm talking about Gross Point Blank.
Absolutely, man.
On your list, right?
It is not, because I moved it. The only reason
what?
I moved it. No. The only reason I moved it, and I don't think you're wrong in this, because I swapped it out just because I know lots of people that know this movie. Like, I didn't know if it was hidden enough, but I think it is, and it was definitely almost on my list. I just pushed it for that. So I totally agree with it being on your list.
It did make more money than most. It's the only film on this that made money. It made $30 million off a $15 million budget. But, for example, on Letterboxd, only 30,000 people have logged it in the 23 years since
it
was.
Totally, I totally agree that it's a valid pick. And it is the bomb.
It's just, it's, I don't know what it is. Like, Alan Arkin is his psychiatrist. So he's a hitman. Martin Blank is his name. John Cusack plays this hitman who decides to go back to his 10-year high school reunion, is it?
Yeah, I want to say 10 years.
And to try and rekindle his romance with Minnie Driver, who was his flame back in high school. And this was back when Hollywood thought Minnie Driver was going to be big. So she had this film. She had some other ridiculous, shitty romances. And she also had that movie Hard Rain with Christian Slater and Morgan Freeman.
I just remembered now that you're no fan of Minnie Driver. I just remembered.
I'm just realizing I probably should have Hard Rain on, unless Hard Rain is not from the 90s and is, in fact, 2000 or so. Now I need to look that up.
You're talking about Black Rain or Hard Rain?
Fuck!
What?
1998. Oh, I should have changed my level. Hard Rain is also a great film from this same era. In fact, 1 year later. No, Hard Rain. It's Christian Slater, Morgan Freeman. Black Rain is, you're talking about the Michael Douglas film and Andy Garcia film.
Oh, Hard Rain with Morgan Freeman with the rain?
Yeah. A dam floods or overflows at the same time that a bunch of gangs are robbing whatever
you
the hell they're robbing.
You liked that one?
Yeah, I did.
Man, I thought Phantoms was better than that one. Phantoms. I was like, you're bombing Phantoms.
Not on my list. Anyway, back to Gross Point Blank.
Sorry. Back to
anyway, so he goes back there. I think his sister plays his, Joan Cusack plays his secretary. Dan Aykroyd's in it as a rival hitman. And it's just kind of this perfect blend of him murdering people in a seemingly kind of cool way because he only sort of kills people you don't really like. So it's okay. I don't really believe that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great, I would love to watch it again. It's been that long since I've watched it, but it's well recommended.
I'll watch Party That with you. That's cool.
Ooh, wonder if we could find that and watch that.
Because you know what's cool about this movie is the freaking soundtrack as well. It was all 80s because it was his like school reunion thing. Yep. So it was like King Dick, man. King Dick. So anyway.
Nice. All right. That's my... Well, nice. I said that, of course, because it's my choice. My number 8, Gross Point Blank.
All right. My number 8 is actually kind of a scary film.
What?
That's
no.
Right.
Wait.
You,
sorry.
You won't consider it scary, but for me it's scary. Okay. The movie is called Stir of Echoes.
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon, y'all, 1999. So he's this blue-collar man. He's named Tom Witzke or something. And he scoffs at supernatural phenomena until he lets his wife's sister put him into a hypnotic trance. And then when he wakes up, he realizes he has like a like psychic connection with his son. And he's also having these alarming hallucinations of a missing teenage neighbor girl. And then like basically it becomes this kind of weird supernatural psychological kind of thriller. And it at the time it did not do well because it also features a child who can speak to dead people. And it was very close to The Sixth Sense.
And about the same time or just after, was it?
Just about, man. Like almost same year, I think. I haven't quite got it here, but it's very close to. So that's why this one didn't do that well. But it's a really serious atmospheric character-driven supernatural drama. It's just Kevin Smith's blue-collar character.
Kevin Smith?
Kevin Bacon's blue-collar like character. It really, really resonates. And there's shock cuts that make you jump a bit, which I don't like, but it was still quite good. But digital visualizations of ghosts and stuff sort of make your flesh crawl a bit, and I remember it being an interesting watch.
Okay.
So Stir of Echoes.
Remember very little about it. Certainly not enough to fight you on it. So surprised to me, but that's nice to hear. In fact, it's almost
inconceivable
to hear you talking about a film that's supernatural on this list.
Weird one, right?
Not speaking on supernatural because that's my number 6. My number 7 is a film which I love the shit out of, and it could be higher, but everything from here on up, I love every film. From 8 upwards, like I said, I'm a little bit about Dark City, I'm not as sure, but number 7 is a film which nobody saw. It made only 63,000 at the box office. It's got a little bit of notoriety, a little bit on sort of VHS afterwards, but again, to give you an indication, only 1,300 people have ever logged this on Letterboxd. I'm talking about SFW starring Stephen Dorff.
Oh, what a good choice. I forgot about that movie. Fuck, that was a good film.
Well, there you go. So that's how hidden it is. Wayne has forgotten about it. This is a film.
It's so good.
It also stars Reese Witherspoon, Jake Busey, Joey Lauren Adams, who's in a lot of the Kevin Smith films around this sort of time as well. And it's directed by a guy named Jeffrey Levy, whose only real notable credit before this was he made the film Ghoulies, which spawned a whole bunch of sequels.
Of course you saw that.
And then apparently he's like a barrister, and I had a bit of a read up earlier on him. And so he's just this multi-talented dude who just made really minuscule budgeted films. And this is based on some kind of novel where SFW stands for So Fucking What? And Stephen Dorff and Reese Witherspoon are the two survivors of this weird group that busted in late at night to some sort of quickie mart, sort of
kidnapped them,
kidnapped or held everyone hostage inside the store, and they basically said unless the local channel streams 24/7 what they're recording in the store. They will murder someone every hour. They don't. They end up killing three or four of the hostages until eventually Stephen Dorff sort of leads a sort of revolt.
Cliff Bab, yeah.
Breaks out. His best mate gets killed. I think that was Jake Busey. Don't quote me on that.
That's right.
Maybe someone else. Jake knows where the actually, I think, was his best mate. I take that back.
Yeah.
And so they survive. But all the way through being filmed, he's basically saying, you know, SFW, so fucking what? So fucking what that I'm in here and my best friend's dead and, you know, I could die now, at any moment. So fucking what? And that becomes this huge social, it's before social media. No.
There was no social media. They just sent out these videos and the media played them and people became rallying around them. So
it's almost like a precursor to the influence or the power of social media.
Absolutely. Without social media, that's why it's so cool.
And then their journey, because he and Wendy, I think her name is, that's just off the top of my head, that's how much this movie stuck with me. He decides to go and see her because she's the only person that understands what he's going through. And then it's the media chasing them. It becomes a bit of a road movie. It's fucking cool. I love this movie. No one's seen it. If you at all can find it, and you probably can't, I just think it's one of these ones you can't find anywhere, but if you can, check out SFW, knowing that it's 26 years old and it's a bit out of time.
Now, let me just say something. I've had this experience with this movie where someone like back when I was in my 20s, like early 20s, they're like, so what's a good movie? And I said, yo, SFW is the bomb, right? And it was like a sort of older couple. And they're like, all right. But they're sort of cool, I thought. I'm like, no, you may be able to like that. They go, they grab it, they come back. That movie sucked. I'm like, what? Yeah,
I can see that.
Yeah, man, that sucked. I'm like, what do you mean? All the fucking cool shots with there was a gunshot
awesome
that we... Yeah, you know, we emanated it in that stupid fucking movie we made, right?
So. Which one?
Reap. Oh, no, The Family. Anyway, it was... I thought it was really good. I saw it again years later, and I saw that it's a bit rough. It's a very rough-looking movie.
Yep.
So I think that's what put them off. But still, if you dig indie at all, then you'll love this
show. Yeah, that's actually a really good point to make if you dig indie at all. And I'm just giving you an example. This soundtrack is fucking killer. I had it on CD.
Oh, God. Paul
Soundgarden, Hole, Radiohead, fucking Guar. Not that I'm a big fan of Guar, but like that just gives you an idea. And some of the songs, oh, they're so good.
Do you remember there's a scene of slow-mo Stephen Dorff just walking by a group of shops with his...
With Creep playing, right?
With Creep playing?
Yeah.
And it was this perfect, like, just because they slow-moed it, it just seems so... It was beautiful, I guess.
Also,
it
might have been ripped off in the film Reap.
Yes, also ripped off. There you go.
Again, wow. Without realizing it, but there you are. Okay, nice. So that's my 7, SFW.
Okay, my number 7, folks, is a movie I'm kind of thinking it'll be on Paul's list. It's one we adored, and I think I still adore it. It's called Judgment Night.
Judgment Night! Hell yeah, it is.
On your list? Yeah. All right. Guys, this movie has got Emilio Estevez. Stephen Hopkins directed this one.
Bit of a fan favorite around these parts.
Totally. So Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Dennis Leary, Stephen Dorff again. This is one of the... I guess this is a movie he sunk. I don't know. Stephen Dorff is known as the sinker. He's like the Jai Courtney of that. So
that's unfair. I hate Jai Courtney, but I really like Stephen Dorff, so I don't understand.
No, I like him too.
And he didn't sink
like,
Blade. Huh?
No, he's true. But like in Entourage, they actually make that joke. They'll go, this guy will sink a movie faster than Stephen Dorff, right? So it's just well known. Anyway, and that happened with this movie because unfortunately it was $21 million budget. It made $12 million. And it's about four friends who are on their way to a boxing match. They get caught in heavy traffic. So they take a shortcut in order to get there quicker. But unfortunately, it leads to them witnessing a murder. And then they're on the run from Dennis Leary and his gangsters. And it's pretty... It's bro for sure. But it's also great.
Yeah, man, it's the interaction between them. I mean, Jeremy Piven giving a little early preview of what he's going to be doing as Ari Gold in Entourage. But I dug this film. I dug it a lot.
This is so
cool. We had worked ourselves up about it because of the soundtrack. The soundtrack, we talked about this before as well.
Oh,
I have.
Yes.
It was the first soundtrack ever where, I think it's Happy Walters is his name. It could be a she. I apologize. I should never assume gender.
Whatever. Go on.
Basically combined a rock band or an alt rock band with a rap band, and you get some of these absolute killer tracks like hard to believe, but Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill doing a song together.
That's right.
Right? Faith No More and Booyah Tribe doing a song together.
Yep. The opening song by Teenage Fan Club and
De La Soul?
Of De La Soul, yep. Right? Traveling or whatever it's called.
Traveling.
It was fucking cool. Yeah, and then it's do 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 do. That shit is so good. I remember that shit, man. I still listen to that shit now. It's the bomb.
And there's some nice, as we said, some nice direction in this film, some nice crane shots and the like as well. I think this is really unfairly maligned. I bought this film on DVD from Canada. Couldn't even find it in America.
Really? Yeah. I was amazed that it bombed. I thought, like, this is one of the movies I remember about my childhood, learning about cinema or just getting used to shit like this, where we all went out and saw this movie, and then we saw it, thought it was awesome, then we went and got burgers, and then we didn't even drink back then because we were pretty nice kids, right? So,
and the very fact that you have it at number 7 on your list, for me, is vindication of how good this film is.
Well done.
All right. I mentioned my number 6 was a bit of a supernatural film. And I wonder, I know you're appreciative of this film as well. $46 million budget, this one, starring Denzel, made only $25 million. It's one of his big failures. Directed by Gregory Hoblit, it is Fallen.
Oh, Fallen's great.
But not,
definitely great.
But not on your list. Great. All right. Also stars John Goodman, Donald Sutherland, and M. Beth Davids. Oh, and James Gandolfini, which I did not remember off the top of my head, but there you go.
I didn't either.
And Fallen is basically a film about a detective who is searching for a serial killer. Turns out he starts to suspect the killer each time around. Well, it's a different set of murders. He starts to think the same person's responsible, even though he's already caught and had that person murdered. Oh, sorry, put to death.
Put to death, yeah.
So they've been caught, they've been executed, yet the MO is exactly the same. How can that possibly be? For a film that's 22 years old, I could spoil it, but I won't, because this film...
No, you should see it.
This film is genuinely one of the great unsung thrillers that... And I don't understand why it doesn't get more play.
Neither do I.
Denzel, John Goodman, killing it. Donald Sutherland.
John Goodman
James Gandolfini as support. Elias Koteas as well, who is a bloke who I recognise from this film. Whenever he pops up and thinks, this is the film I remember him from. He's awesome as well.
Ninja Turtles.
I think the song that they're singing through it. It's so great. And
haunting.
Yeah, that's a good word to describe it. I'm disappointed it's not on your list, but I'm glad that you appreciate the choice.
Do you know what? If I thought about it, it probably would have been. Like, this is... I've got so many fucking... Yeah.
There we go. All right, that's my number 6. Fallen.
Okay. My number 6 is an odd film that I always liked, and I don't even know... why I know I like it necessarily, but it's called Ravenous.
Yeah, I know you love this. Perplexes me that you love this film.
I know. So lots of people don't like
this. Well, no, and some people really do. I'm pretty sure it makes a good few mentions in the listener feedback. So,
well, this is a cannibal Wild West adventure set in the 1840s. All right, and basically, Guy Pearce plays this captain in the U.S. Army exiled to this remote fort. And when he's there, Robert Carlyle dramatically appears and he starts telling tales of a soldier in the mountains gone rogue, and he starts eating people, and everyone feels weird and obliged to investigate, leading like to a bunch of bad things. And basically the tenet or the thing this movie purports is that no one knows this because no one eats people anymore, but apparently when you eat people, it makes you really, really strong, and you can fucking like you can heal really quickly, and it just makes you massively wicked. That's the premise of the film. But in the meantime, people are trying to eat each other, and the lead guy... It's really, really weird, but I really, really liked it. And it's shot in Mexico and Slovakia, but it looks like the American sort of...
Isn't it all snow everywhere?
In some bits.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember going to the cinema to see this and just being really disappointed, but I think it's one I need to give a revisit to.
See, the thing is, this is the type of thing Paul would like, but yeah, I don't, because it's kind of a fucking horror.
One of those weird... upside down, bizarro world, darkest timeline moments where Wayne likes a horror and I don't.
Yeah, I call it a bleak comic gem, kind of. That's what I think of this one. It's just like, it's... Yeah.
It's funny you call it comic. I don't think it's trying to be comedic at all.
I think it is. But
again, I'll trust you more than me. I've only watched it once. In what year did it come out?
1999.
Okay, so I haven't seen it in 21 years. So there you go. And directed by Antonia Bird.
Yeah, I don't know her.
Okay, off the top of my head, that's not a bad pull. Well done, me.
Well done.
Okay, my number 5, we're going straight back to you, because my number 5 is Judgment Night!
Excellent.
And if you've heard the soundtrack, you know why I did that.
Yeah, it's there. Worth checking out. My number 5 is a film that I saw on Laserdisc. And
Laserdisc.
That's right. It's called Strange Days.
Initially made my list, and I said I've only got one honorable mention. Actually, that would be my number 12, Strange Days.
Really?
Yep. Catherine Bigelow directed.
Catherine Bigelow. Yeah, and written by James Cameron and Jay Cox. And it's got Ralph Fiennes, Angela Bassett, Juliette Lewis, and Tom Sizemore.
Can I just say that if there's any person in the world that proves black don't crack, it's Angela Bassett.
Oh, no shit, man.
Holy shit. She was like in this
Black
movie
Panther, looks the same.
25 years ago. And in like What's Love Got to Do With It playing
Tina Turner
and the like. And yet she still pops up in like American Horror Story and whatever 2-3 years ago. She looks different.
Oh, yeah.
But she doesn't look that much different. It's astounding.
Nah. No, it's, that's off the chain. But this film here, right? This is like cyberpunky because it's set in the future as in 1999, but it came out in 1995. Basically, Ralph Fiennes is an ex-cop, but now he deals in something called squids, which is stuff that you put on your head, looks like a squid, and it actually makes you feel whatever they record. He's telling squid movies, which are recorded by people. It's a long story. There's sex stuff and all sorts of stuff going on.
Well,
it's
you put this on your head, right, and then you're experiencing from the person who's recorded its perspective everything. Not just the vision of it, but the feeling of it and all the rest of it, right?
Yes, their emotions, what they're feeling, all that sort of stuff. So, but the actual film itself is sort of... I like the style of the film. The way it's lit and the way it looks is really, really cool. But I still think it's actually quite a good film.
It was slow. So, that was my problem with it.
I think the problem is it was a little long.
Yeah, I remember literally us saying to each other, that film really needed an editor.
It was 2.5 hours, man. So
it should have been two. Two and maybe change. 20 easily. Minutes shaved off that film, it could have been a classic.
So it's got this weird fan base now. So it's... Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It only made $8 million on a $42 million
budget.
So
wow,
it's just
it really was
tank.
A failure.
Yeah, so there you go. But Strange Days, I still do kind of recommend it if you like a bit of odd sci-fi.
Okay, nice. All right, my number four. Gee, I hope this one's on your list. If off mic, I did say it away, I thought we'd have four crossovers. What we've had so far, two? Or so?
Yeah.
We're sort of running out here. I could be well wrong now, I realize. But my number four is Mystery Men.
No.
Oh, come on, man.
Again, I think it's totally fine to be on this list, but I feel like it was very popular.
No, what are you talking about? It made $33.5 million off $68 million budget.
Yeah, oh, it tanked. Oh, okay. I just thought everyone I know knows it, even girls.
Yeah, again.
No?
Under 30,000, 28,000.
Yeah. No, I have no problem with it being on your list because it's definitely an amazing film, which is not like a celebrated
No one talks about it. No
means.
One talks about Mystery Men.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I guess Jeffrey Rush and stuff like that. Just all his stupid like moves and the voice he made and stuff like that. That's what made me remember this movie.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, we refer to a couple of the gags all the time on this show. Like, our show is number one. All other shows are number two or lower.
The Wes Studi. That's good shit. Wes Studi, great.
Like this is basically, if you don't know it, and we have mentioned it on the show before, but basically this is directed by Kinka Usher, and it's a film about in this alternate kind of world where people are basically pretending to be superheroes. They manufacture themselves to be superheroes to help out the one real superhero dude who's played by Greg Kinnear. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. What is it?
You neither.
Captain Fantastic. You're exactly right. It's Captain Amazing. Exactly. Almost right. And so Ben Stiller is just Mr. Furious, which...
That is the funniest thing about it. What's his special power, Paul?
It's becoming furious. It's just getting
Yes, he just gets
angry.
Angry. Just gets really angry. That's it.
Including some great crane shots where it cranes away from him as his power explodes. Jeffrey Rush is the bad guy, Casanova Frankenstein. William H. Macy is the shoveler who just wields a shovel. He's just a dude who works. He's a laborer who has a shovel.
Yeah.
That's it.
He has a shovel.
Hank Azaria is the Blue Raja. I think he can bend forks and shit with his mind.
No, he throws forks. That's it. When he could, I think it's like, why don't you just throw knives? Like, no, I'm throwing forks.
Paul Rubens is in this movie. He's spleen because he basically farts.
That's
you're getting the kind of film
that
we're talking about here. So good, so funny.
Oh, but there's the guy who's an invisible man, but he can only do it when no one was. it's a good show. It's a good show.
I think this film's great. Very, very funny. Again, begging for a rewatch. I would love to see whether or not it holds up after all this time. I saw it a couple of times at the time. Never again since, but it has such a warm heart place in my heart.
I suspect it would hold up.
I hope it does. Maybe we'll do that. If we can find that somewhere, maybe we can do it as a watch party, because that could be a lot of fun with the listeners. Devo, that it's not on your list, though. Devo.
Yeah. I understand. Okay.
And don't give a shit. Moving on. You're number four.
Well, my number three is
Wait. You're four, right?
Oh, sorry, my number four.
Let's not have that happen again.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you something. Last show, we made one of those jokes about a woman where I just say her name and then you try and make it a sex thing. So like Jessica Chastain, we were talking about. Yep. And I think you said, So you'd like to Jessica her Chastain, which doesn't make any fucking sense.
Chastain her Jessica, I said.
Yes, okay, also, that's slightly better.
Okay. Fuck you.
No, I got it, though. I thought about it for a week, and now I got
it. Oh, good. A whole week. Here we go.
Yeah, a whole week. Oh, here it is. the joke is, Jessica left a Chastain on my underwear.
Hot damn!
That's not good.
Okay. Oh, come on! That's way better than Chastain, my Jessica! What the fuck?
One of those, one of us came up with on the spot. The other one took 7 days.
And it was about 7 days better. If
seven
you ask me. So what's up?
Days.
7 days. Easy, man. It tops out at some stage.
Oh, wait, wait. In fact, wait.
Time for the next level. Forced laughing.
Oh, God. What the fuck is this shit? Oh, my God. This is so long. This is so long. Wow. You can't possibly tell me you know comedy after doing that. Okay.
There we go.
All right. Back to the show.
Come on. You're talking about whatever poor choice.
Yes, number four. My number four was things to do in Denver when you're dead. Oh, that's so high. Okay. Go back to you. Yep. That's how high, son.
That's high. All right. My number three is a film won't be on your list. It's the Wachowski brothers' first film. Sorry, the Wachowski sisters' first film. At one stage was the Wachowski siblings.
Siblings, isn't it? Are they both sisters?
I think they both are.
I mean, they're both girls.
Yep.
Really?
I think so. But don't quote me on that. If I'm wrong, I do apologize in that case. Well, let's just call them Wachowski siblings to be safe. No, it is. Lily and Lana. So, yeah, they have both transitioned. This is Bound.
I knew you'd
1996, man. This film was fucking stunning.
It is in my honorable mentions.
Oh, God damn. So disappointed. Look.
Let's just tell the folks what Bound is about.
It's basically about Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon. Jennifer Tilly is Joe Pantoliano's gangster mole girlfriend. And yep. Gina Gershon is someone a sort of tradie who's coming to do some work on their apartment. It's pretty much all set in this apartment building, so that's how you keep the budget low. It was only from memory about $6 million the budget, made only $7 million. So it's hard to believe that off this gig. Though it's beautifully shot by Bill Pope, who was the director of cinematography.
It is.
It's such a well put together film, and it's basically they fall in love. So Corky and Violet, and then they concoct a scheme to steal all the money from Violet's boyfriend Caesar. His name is, and he gets wind of it, and of course it's this largely three way drama thriller, crime thriller about can they get away with it? You know, there's a couple of pretty hot sex scenes between the girls in it, which
I was just gonna get to that. Yeah. Okay, so what I thought, if this had been my choice, Paul would go, of course you like this one. There's tons of girl on girl action in it. But I'll just tell you, it's not on my list, but it is on Paul's. Make of that one. No, but you are right. It is actually a good show. It's actually very well shot. Okay, so yes, the pork sequences aside, there's sort of a tenderness to it, which is weird, but it's still a gangster movie. It's still like you could view it as a feminist thing, I guess, but
yeah, why not? I don't know. You could, and perhaps it's well read that way.
It was made a long, long time ago as well.
24 years ago, 1996. Yeah. So, you know, hats off to the Wachowskis, I think.
I guess it now makes sense why they were so sensitive to the plight of the, I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, it does. Yeah. It does make sense, and good on them.
Word. Okay, my number three is one that I'm sure Paul's going to have on his list, but maybe he thinks it's too popular. I don't know. Here we go. The number three is a movie called Arlington Road.
Oh, no, it's not on my list.
Okay, Paul adored this movie, everyone. Yo,
it was one of the greatest twists ever.
It's got Tim Robbins in it, and it was this sort of edgy peek behind like the American suburban, basically. It's basically a terrorist movie, okay? But it is very insidious in how it actually brings to light like the way that terrorism moves within this particular cell, which doesn't even look like a cell, and how they make innocent bystanders into kind of like accomplices just because they're clever about it. And it's just the way that it's shot and the way that it's put together. You're always on a bit of an edge until the movie, and there is a hell of an ending is all I'll say. Is what I think. So, very, very cool. Arlington Road, give it a shot. Paul dug this movie, is that recall?
Yeah, I did. I think it's a good choice. Could easily have made my list had I remembered it.
There you are.
That's the genius about this kind of show, the hidden gems. Of course, we're going to miss certain things. But yeah, this could easily have been on my list. No worries at all.
This is a slow burn, this film, but yes. It's worth it's worth really the journey. Sinister. It's really cool.
Worth the journey, and some great performances from Tim Robbins and Jeff Bridges.
Excellent job.
My number two is a film which has gained notoriety, and you know, in retrospect, maybe It's so good. It's so good. It's so good that I'm going to be releasing this week, if you at all want to talk about it in a deep dive kind of way. EFG, Nick and I talked about this film in our ongoing series as crossovers between the podcast. I'm talking about the Coen brothers' Miller's Crossing. At the time, Miller's...
Okay, okay, go on.
Nobody watched this film. It made only $5 million off a $10 to $14 million budget because no one knew who the Coens were. And then Fargo happens. And then Big Lebowski happens, or maybe in the other order. And people started coming back to it. But if you listen to people talk about their favorite Coen brothers films, nobody mentions Miller's Crossing. No one. It's kind of one of their lost films. Yeah, you and I might be the exception.
We just fucking couldn't get enough of this.
I rewatched it again for the EFG Nick and I segment on the Patreon, which we recorded a couple months back. And as I said, dropping now for this purpose. But I was like, I went into it thinking, I've talked about this film a lot in the last, three, four times in the last 5 years. Maybe I'm overselling it. Maybe it's going to suck. Well, how's that going to be? Ugh, egg on the face. Nope. Four stars. This film is great.
I think this movie is the first time I sort of understood literary device. Like, this is, in this film, right, I didn't even notice it until I sort of noticed it happened a few times. But basically, when someone gets shot, There was a shot of like that person's hat falling on the floor, or in one scene it's some person's toupee on the floor, and there's a lingering shot on that. And it's just the movie is actually setting up precedent, showing you its style. And someone dies, you see something fall down from their head. Really, really cool shit like that. I'm like, oh, that's what this movie's doing. That's the style. That's the actual. I don't know. The soul of this movie is things like that, which is what makes it art instead of just shit. So really, and it's done so well that it wasn't like, you know, prescribed. It wasn't like shitty looking. It looked great. So yeah, perfect.
100% concur. I think Gabriel Byrne, fantastic as the lead in this film. Tom Reagan. Marcia Gay Harden is the sort of femme fatale type character. John Turturro is her brother. But then you have, I think the star turns really hard for you from John Polito? As Johnny Casper and Albert Finney as... they're not star turns because they were already big actors, known character actors. Yeah. They're just great as the mob bosses who are at war with each other. And it's set in 1929 and it's about Tom getting caught between these two warring factions and how he's trying to negotiate it. And it's just so good. It's so... Like I say, you described it far better than I could have. I just would have said it's stylish. It's stylish as fuck.
But in a way that's like... there's like Albert Finney's running down a road with his fucking Tommy gun, like shooting it.
What's the Irish funeral song playing? Danny Boy playing.
That's it. And it's something about that scene is it's at once electric and sort of, I don't know, like sad. I don't know. It's weird, but it's worth watching. The only reason I'm actually surprised to hear this was a flop. I just assumed it was like really successful, and that's why I didn't put it on. But wow, okay, cool.
Yeah, again, I can't remember what it was. Someone put up a tweet about, you know, what's the best Coen Brothers film? And I was like reading through 70 responses. Not one person mentioned Miller's Crossing out of their three or four that I would mention. I'm like, damn, I need to give this film some love. And that's, here we are.
Okay, fair enough. Nope, good call.
All right, thank you. You're number two.
All right. My number two is a film called Rounders that I always loved.
Oh, my God, that's...
I love this film, man. It's got Ed Norton and Matt Damon, in it. And it's basically about these two friends, and they're gamblers, and they need to win at a high-stakes poker game to quickly pay off a large debt, okay, that was racked up by Edward Norton because he's an asshole. Now, the term rounder refers to a person traveling around from city to city seeking high-stakes card games. But what happens, what's cool about this film is it starts with Matt Damon being a real kick-ass gambler. He goes and does, like, John Malkovich's in it. He goes to his big, like, high-end gambling game and loses, right? Loses his tuition, loses all his money, boom, boom, boom. And then the movie starts from there. He says, this is what happens when you lose. You go to university, you try to learn, you know, whatever. He's trying to be a lawyer. He takes little shitty jobs here and there for cash, and he just lives really, really light. And from there, you can see how this then becomes him just learning that in his soul, he actually is a gambler because that's what he actually turns him on. And that's what he's good at. And it's kind of weird, but it's really, really cool at the same time. I thought it was really well made. You like it?
I've seen it once. I wasn't
not so much
that impressed, to be honest.
I was so impressed.
Never even blipped on my radar for this topic.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry,
man. This is great. It's got Gretchen Mol and like John, you know, Malkovich, and John Turturro. Very cool, in my opinion. Worth a look. Especially for like that card sharking type movie.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Like I said, I think for me it would be a stock standard 2.5-star film, but I only watched it once all those years ago. So
all good.
All right. Well, then let's do the recap and wrap it up with our number ones. Number 10, Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. 9, Boom. Dark City. 8, Gross Point Blank. 7, SFW. 6, Fallen. 5, Judgment Night. 4, Mystery Men. 3, Bound. 2, Miller's Crossing. And my number 1, another film which I did a deep dive with regard to, with Epic Film Guy Nick and I, The Frighteners.
Of course, that's on your list.
Yeah, like it had to be on my list. And it is one of my all-time favorite films, which... $26 million budget, made only $29.3 million, so an abject failure once you factor in marketing. It is a Peter Jackson joint, which helped him get the Lord of the Rings gigs in the end from 1996, and basically follows Michael J. Fox as a guy who can see ghosts, and the ghosts that help him be a charlatan, and the three ghosts, and he come up against this personification, or this specter of death, which is murdering everybody in their town. And so the battle lines are drawn. It's this comedic... dark horror / comedy. It's got everything I love about
film. It was great.
I mean, some of the effects don't hold up now, obviously, but all of the time, it's astoundingly well put together. Very funny. This one is already out for patrons, but Epic Film Guy Nick argued that the sort of FBI agent played by Jeffrey Combs is not required in the film, and that lets it down a little bit. But I kind of like him too. I think he adds a lot of comedic value.
He reminded me of Jim Carrey so much. Oh, like just the way he's playing that.
Yeah. Yep. Very over the top. I see where you're coming from there. I love this fucking movie. If you haven't seen The Frighteners and you're not a patron, then this is your call to arms. Do check it out.
You know what's cool about this film, right? So he shot it in New Zealand, but it really, really looks like an American sort of, I don't know where it's supposed to be, town.
Yeah. Well, so it wouldn't be a city.
No. But the way that it's put together is really, really cool. And Michael J. Fox doing this kind of thing, I remember, was a huge problem at the time. Like, for him, he was like, this is a big risk for me. And then it turned out, like, good.
Well, it turned out good for us, but clearly the budget return probably wouldn't have turned out good for Michael J. Fox.
Obviously, it showed a studio that this guy could handle it, though. Because, like, when after, like... I remember bringing this to Paul on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
And we actually thought, like, ooh, should we wait until movies, though? Like, because we thought it might come out on the screen.
Well, I think this is one of those films which, back in those days, in the mid-90s, we would get films sometimes 6 and 9 months after the North America did. And so, somehow, through whatever weird non-region encoding that Laserdisc had, because it was so small that, and you were the only person I knew who had a Laserdisc player, that they would just release it worldwide at the same time. So, you could go to the video store and see a film on Laserdisc.
That hadn't opened here.
That
yet.
Hadn't even opened here and was coming.
I know.
And so you could kind of be like, what? And your mind would be absolutely so fucking blown.
Yeah. That time's version of Torrance.
Yeah, I guess so. So that's my number one, The Frighteners.
Cool one. Cool. Nope. That's not bad at all. And totally what I would expect for you.
And
so good one.
Therefore, your 10 and recap and your number one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My number 10 was Freeway. Number 9 was The Player. 8, Stir of Echoes. 7, Judgment Night.
Judgment
6,
Night.
There it is. Mortal Kombat! 6 was Ravenous. 5, Strange Days. 4, Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Things to 3. Do in Denver When You're Dead!
All right, we'll do it this way now. Number 3, Arlington Road! 2, Rounders. And my number 1 is a film I always, always dug, but I'm sure it slipped under everyone's radar. It's called Swimming with Sharks.
Swimming with Sharks!
And you knew Paulie was loading that shit up. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Frank Whaley and He Who Should Not Be Named.
Yes, Kevin Spacey and the Brett from fucking Frank Whaley from Pulp Fiction. Yep. Now, this is a very black and a very effective comedy about the film industry. Kevin Spacey is the studio exec who is the world's biggest cunt. He's just the worst boss anyone ever had. He yells, he screams, he throws coffee at his assistant. But this assistant position is very coveted in LA or in whatever, you know, Hollywood, because it's like the next step after this position is typically you get to be an executive. So lots of people like whatever.
What?
But he still goes.
No.
What?
I'm amazed that people would want to put up with that abuse for a job.
Yeah, it was sort of the mid-90s. Yeah, it's Hollywood. You know how it is. Anyway, what ends up happening is there's, although that's the backdrop of the movie, there ends up being some kidnapping going on when there's some foul play afoot, and basically Kevin Spacey ends up tied up in Frank Whaley's house being tortured. Sound like it's a lot. Yeah, it sounds harsher than it is, because it's actually very, very, very well put together. And I remember this is one of those first movies where I was looking at it, and when the ending happened, which I did not expect at all, I just felt so much that it should have been really, really, really popular, this movie, because it's not Pulp Fiction-y, but it's like, it's harsher than it should be, and it was really well handled. So I really actually think everyone should watch this movie, Swimming with Sharks, 94.
All right, bit of a shock, but fair enough. Uh-huh. That one tickled your
big
fancy.
Fan. Always been a huge fan.
All right, well, that's our list. Well, not quite. What about yours? Because what about some honorable mentions? Just give us four, Wayne, tops.
A Perfect World, Kevin Costner. I thought it was a very cool show, okay. But it was probably a bit popular. Yeah. You didn't like that one?
Yeah.
Really? Mm. Shit, okay. Very Bad Things is a black comedy in 1998. Yep.
Christian Slater again.
Mm-hmm. There's a movie called Small Soldiers, which is kind of a kid's film, but I really, really liked it. And
Will Wheaton.
Yeah, it was all the animation and shit.
No. Sorry, I'm mixing up Toy Soldiers with Small Soldiers.
Yeah.
That's
no,
Kirsten
Small
Dunst
Soldiers.
In a very young role.
That's right. And the final one is, this is stupid, it's called Dark Angel. It was a Dolph Lundgren movie, right? That Paul and me sort of liked.
Also,
at the time.
Also called I Come in Peace.
I Come in Peace. Yeah. That's what it's called. Yeah, it's a 1990, it's an R-rated action movie. It's sort of a broke ass. Predator 2. So broadcast Predator 2 is how I would describe it.
Hence Wayne's
because it's set in the city.
Unbelievable affection for it. Okay. My one honorable mention beyond the couple, which I lamented not having on my list that you did mention, is Arachnophobia.
Oh! So wait, you dug it?
Yeah.
I thought
Arachnophobia scared
because
the living
so
piss out of me, but Arachnophobia, because I don't like spiders very much.
Mm-hmm.
But 1990, the reason I cut it out is because it did make a little bit, to be honest, like Gross Point Blank made sort of double its budget back. So, yeah, I just thought that's one that people know of. But then again, I could be wrong. Could easily be on this list. Should probably be.
Did you see that one in the movies?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, me too. It's fucking... Ooh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the only one of these ridiculous spider films that's ever creeped me out, Arachnophobia.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
That's our list. What about yours? We end up all episodes of The Countdown with your feedback in the segment that we call The Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Twitter. And we're going to have more than 10 this week, I'm not going to lie, because we want to honour as many of you who are stuck at home, isolating and the like. We've just heard the Australian government is extending some of the restrictions, so more of you are going to be stuck home this week, more on the watch parties at the end.
Which is fine. We can have fun. We can still have fun.
That's what this podcast is about. Hooray. Tara Maholi, long-term listener to the show and supporter of the show. Number 3, Desperado. Now, that never pinged on my list because we love it.
We love it, and also I think it did extraordinarily well because it had a $3 million budget. And it made more. Having said that, it's definitely on the list.
Yeah, I don't think as many people remember it as they should. Joe vs. Volcano.
Yes. Love that shit. I love it.
And Tombstone. Again, I think I maybe made money, but...
That one did well.
It's a good film. Nerd Lantern of Sector 2814 just went on a Kurt Russell run. Soldier, Stargate, Escape from LA.
Soldier, really?
Yeah, Soldier's terrible.
I did not care for that one.
Exactly, but I say terrible, it's definitely lesser known. I would have thought Stargate and Escape from LA were probably pretty successful, but without checking it, don't know.
Yeah.
Jackson on Twitter said, The Gaia. The Gaiva? The Gaiva. Which is like a... anime kind of adaptation. I think I did see that one. Clueless. Right. Clueless is definitely remembered. There's no way that's a hidden gem,
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
And The Three Ninjas. Well, I never saw it, so I guess that is a hidden gem.
Sadly, I do.
I'm sorry. Super Retro Throwback Podcast. Steven said, 3, Getting Even with Dad. 2, Private Parts, the Howard Stern movie.
I've heard that's
number
good.
1, Folks. I haven't seen 3 or 1, so hats off there, Steven. Steve from the Everything I Learned from Movies podcast. Pootie Tang. Stone Cold and The Quest.
Have you seen Pootie
Tang? Sure, I haven't.
It's actually directed by Louis C.K.
Oh, wow, is it?
And then he got kicked off it. And then Chris Rock's in it. And it's pretty funny, but it's so nuts.
Okay.
Anyway.
Sounds like a good choice then. Brad from The Cinema Guy said Ninja Scroll, that anime manga one.
Yeah, I remember one.
Strange Days, D.Y. Wayne. And Hackers of the World Unite.
Angelina Jolie.
And Johnny Lee Miller. Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast. Number 3, In the Mouth of Madness. Could easily be an honorable mention on my list. Number 2, Edward. Number 1, Falling Down.
Good call. Oh, that was very popular though, right?
Was it? Because do you hear anyone talk about it anymore?
I think it won an Academy.
No.
I'm For sure what? It did. It was a big talk. I don't know. Best my dick. just.
You can't handle the truth.
I have the internet directly.
Wayne's dick is now an Academy Award winner, apparently. Which means...
Oh, shit. Okay. yeah, look, I can't tell, but I'm sure it was very popular.
I'm with Joey. I reckon that one could have made my list. Dan is not the problem said, giving some Canadian love to Alan Moyle, one of the all-time hidden gems, and he had Pump Up the Volume, New Water for Girl, and Empire Records. I think Empire Records is a pretty big one, right?
See, that's the thing. I never heard of it until on video, so who knows?
Maybe not. Gidget Von LaRue from the Retro Cinema Podcast, I Presumed Innocent. I thought you might...
Surely that was big. Surely that was
LA
big.
LA Story?
I did not like that one.
And Heavenly Creatures, Peter Jackson earlier.
That's your jam. That's
well. Your jam. Tim Cormack had Matinee starring John Goodman. I've never seen that one. House Party.
Me neither.
With Kid and Play.
I've seen
and
that one.
Thing You Do starring Tom Hanks, who we're going to mention again in just a moment.
That's right.
John from the Pilot Comics Podcast, supporter of the show. Thank you, John. Trespass. I think that's one with Nick Cage.
Yeah, right. Maybe that one.
Nicole Kidman as well? Or am I making that one up?
Trespass, is that not an Ice-T movie?
Oh, I can't remember. I'm mixing shit up. Yeah. I think you're right. Ice-T.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
The Frighteners and Breakdown with Kurt Russell. That's a better Kurt Russell one that could have been on that list before.
True.
The Crossover Podcast, Matt said Blood In, Blood Out. Like Gang Warfare.
Remember that one?
Angus, I Do Not Know It All. Sorry, Angus, comma.
Me
I
either.
Do Not Know It All. And Rumble in the Bronx.
Oh, Jackie Chan. Yeah. That one, really?
I'm not a big Rumble in the Bronx fan. Sorry. To Matt and sorry to Joey.
His Hong Kong stuff is better. But yeah.
Anth P said, fantastic decade for thriller suspense films. Bound, The Ninth Gate,
there you go.
And Presumed Innocent again.
The fucking Ninth Gate?
Yeah, I didn't like that one either.
That was a Johnny Depp one, right?
Yeah.
That was...
Directed by Roman Polanski.
Fuck.
Nice. Sorry, Anth. Sorry.
That's okay. I personally hated that one. I like that someone else did like.
Over to the Facebook list community, Rob Walters said, I can't speak to the streaming status of these, but Gross Point Blank, Ghost in the Darkness. I honestly thought that would be on your list, Wayne.
Really? Oh, Val Kilmer and fucking
Michael Douglas.
Shit! That should definitely be on my list. Nice. Good
well done, Rob. Well done, sir. And
well
Tremors.
Well done.
Not sure if it's hidden or not, but I love this movie growing up and still do it. Yeah, I think that's a bit big, Tremors, given it had 17 sequels.
Really? I'm amazed it wasn't on your list. I thought you'd definitely have
like
Tremors.
Like I said, it's got 5 sequels, I think. Jake Humphrey had Dolores Claiborne, aka the other Stephen King, Kathy Bates movie. The Cowboy Way, I don't even... Oh, a very competent Woody Harrelson, Kiefer Sutherland comedy. That does ring a bell, actually.
I've seen that one. I've seen
and I'm one Chaplin. Sure, I got RDJ and Oscar nom, but most everyone else has forgotten this absolute banger.
No one saw it.
Yeah, okay. Michael Wood had Ronin, one of the best car chasers of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, as mentioned.
Totally.
And Four Rooms, which, of course, is the collaboration between
Rodriguez,
Tarantino, and a couple other filmmakers as well. Brianna Petty.
I think I liked that.
Oh, sorry, go on. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I think I liked Four Rooms, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it would make my
Tarantino's one was the best of all of
them. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Brianna Petty had But I'm a Cheerleader. Not heard of that one. 2, Phantoms. Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms,
yo. That's so funny.
She literally wrote that, by the way. And another one, great. Drop it's Dead close. Gorgeous. Right Said Fred.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Not Right Said Fred. What's his name?
Right Said Fred. I'm too sexy for this guy.
Why would I go there? That's weird. Rick Mayall and Phoebe Cates.
I remember that one. Yeah, that was great.
David Powell. Top level patron to the show. Great supporter of it. Thank you, David. Shallow Grave. Danny Boyle's debut. Ewan McGregor and
Good Chris call Eccles, was on my honorable
barely list. Out of short pants and one of the best of the decade. The Passion of Darkly Noon. Brendan Fraser's best film ever. Seriously awesome gothic horror set in a surreal fairy tale version of the American Heartland. I didn't see that movie. Never even fucking heard of it. And number one, The Last Supper. Either. Incredibly scripted black comedy about a group of yuppies who decided to stop just talking about the evils of the right wing and start doing something about it.
I fucking love that movie, man. That is king dick.
That's written by, what's his name? Penner. Jonathan Penner.
Michael Pena.
Jonathan Penner
from
Survivor. And I think he even acts in that film. I'm pretty sure he wrote it. And then he's done a film more recently with his wife, who apparently is very ill. And my apologies and all the best to Jonathan Penner and his wife. But their more recent film, The Bye Bye Man, is one of the worst of the decade.
Really? Jonathan, he's like kind of a good-looking guy, right?
Yeah, he's got piercing blue eyes, dark hair.
Yes, he used to be in like The Naked Truth and stuff, which is like a TV show with the chick from Bad Boys 1 in it, Tia Leone.
Really?
Yeah, so he's an actual actor and stuff. He's well known. And he was in that Cheryl and Finn show, that Rude Awakenings show as well.
There you are. Yeah. Luke James Human, Hugh Matinee again, a great coming of age, an ode to B-movie event cinema set to the backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis, directed by Joe Dante. Vegas Vacation, the most laugh out loud of the franchise.
Okay.
And The Getaway, Baldwin and Basinger getting sweaty with guns in a superior remake.
I like that show too. This guy is kind of a connoisseur.
Thought you might like that list. Our friend Alejandro, the expert of all things and therefore the expert of the hidden gems of the 90s, said CB4, Friday,
of course.
Dazed and Confused. Now, I have to say, I don't think Dazed and Confused is a hidden gem at all. Maybe the other two.
Now, just on this comment here, Mike T jumped in and said, what does Wayne think of Friday? And Alejandro's like, well, I don't know if Wayne's even seen Friday. And Mike's like, yes, he has. And there's a story that goes along with that. And very quickly.
Yeah, and I was going to mention Mike T next, but you already have. He said Sirens, CB4, and Friday. Wayne, tell your story.
Okay. Back in my early 20s, this was a day where Mike T, my cousin, said, yo, man, come over. It's like a Tuesday or something like that. We've already done our uni for the morning, so we're just going to hang all day. So I took a day off work, and I hung out with him. And that was the first time. Yeah, that was... I think I was on holiday. Sorry, I was on holiday.
Sure you were.
And so, no, I think I was. It would have been a legit day off. Anyway, went and hung out with them. And that was the first time they had showed me marijuana. Okay? And so I got completely finger banged, like, don't know what the fuck, like, throat hurting, didn't know how to use it, whatever. And I was like, ugh. And I saw all of Friday and Oh Brother Were Out There, and I can't remember a fucking thing. So that was the day. That's right. Anywho, that's what happened that day.
All right, well, there we are. There is the story for all to know. And let's wrap it up with Jordy Davis, another top-level patron to the show. I haven't heard from Jordy for a while, so it's great to hear from him. I thought this one might also make your list, Wayne. The Phantom. Not Phantoms, The Phantom.
Oh, you mean the Billy Zane
comic book one.
Yes, I have an odd fondness for that show, even though it's crap.
Twilight from 1998. This was a really intriguing detective film with Alec Newman and an overall stellar cast, that sort of feels like Jake from Chinatown's Last Hurrah. Don't I never heard of that one. Also, Wayne would give this a bonus score. So basically, what Jordy's seeing there is...
You know
I see what's going on there.
I see a pair of thick, weighty breasts, and all logic flies out the window.
You're an ass.
And number one, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
I remember hearing all
this is a Clint Eastwood film, I do believe. Mm-hmm. Shocked this film did so poorly in theaters. It's a fantastic adaptation of a fantastic book with a great cast and honestly the progression of Kevin Spacey. Characterization looks very meta now. Love this film. Mm. There we are. That's a lot of your feedback. Thank you. Thank you to people who are joining us. Thank you to people who are listening at this most difficult time. And we're going to have each Pop 10 segment and each episode will be a little bit longer as a result so that we can honor you being at home as we pretty much close to are now being at home as well.
Yeah, pretty much.
If you haven't caught it, Wayne and I completely at different ends of the planet, i.e. 900 meters away from each other.
900 meters away, not in the same room this episode. Don't know if you guys caught that or not.
There.
Hopefully you didn't.
Yeah, hopefully not. And it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. Well, there you go. All right, Wayne, how did the listeners get in touch with us with their feedback for next week's topic, which we're about to reveal?
Google The Countdown Podcast and you will find us everywhere or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. You can check us out on Podbean where we host the show. The Facebook Listener Community link is in the show notes and indeed on ccradio.com.au, our Australian home. Now, we're going to be doing the watch parties as mentioned at the top of the show. Keep an eye on those various social media means and we'll announce what we're going to be watching in very short order. But we have confirmed Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure will be 10 a.m. Australian Western Standard Time next Saturday morning.
Cool, right, cool.
Do your maths on where you are. 1 p.m. in the Eastern States, 10 p.m. I think on the Eastern Seaboard in the States, and therefore 7 p.m. I think on the Western Seaboard. But if I'm out by an hour or two...
Bloody hell, did you do that all your head? I've
had to coordinate a lot of podcasts and I think we're 7 hours ahead of the UK, so... That would mean sort of Friday.
Yeah, I want to say yes.
Oh, that would not really work for you at all there in the UK. Do apologize. We will get you definitely sorted, though, for the night version we're going to have during the week. All right. Well, that is the watch party. But what are we doing next week, Wayne, for episode 262 of The Countdown?
I hope you'll think this is okay, but we're doing the top 10 Tom Hanks films.
Right. The man survived coronavirus. The man has come to Australia, caught it somewhere along the line, survived. So now we want to commemorate that and celebrate that. By basically saying, well, what are his 10 best films? But a lot of crossover.
He has done a lot of work.
He has done a lot of work. So maybe there'll be some interesting choices, but we think that might be a fun episode to do and a bit of lighthearted one at this stage.
That's right.
All right. Cool. And that is it from us for today. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 261 of The Countdown. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
Absolutely. Captain Holt's going to feature again to commemorate the soundboard this week.
Vindication!
Now you're just using it for no reason whatsoever. It's going to be in fucking context, ever. You ass.
Fuck ass bitch. We will catch you next week.